I'm Brian McCreath. I'm at Tanglewood with pianist and sometimes conductor Leon Fleischer. And Leon Fleischer, thank you for taking some time today, and congratulations and happy birthday.
Isn't that kind? You're a little bit in advance, but nonetheless, thank you. Thank you.
I am very curious, just because we never talked before, your trajectory, your life has been such an incredible journey. And when you think back to the 60s, how do you find yourself as a different person now from the person you thought you might be at this particular time?
Oh, golly, you're asking these existential questions. It's interesting because had I not had this 35-year bout with focal dystonia in my right hand, I probably just would have continued being, a two-handed pianist, piano player, in hopefully increasing my repertoire and growing more wise and concise and economical in a sense with time. But I did contract focal dystonia, which limited my playing and suddenly forced me to expand my activities and vision as a musician, both in my teaching aspects as well as repertoire aspects, learning as much of the left-hand repertoire as I found interesting and challenging, and conducting. And I must say the some of the experiences that I've had as a conductor have been sources of supreme joy and satisfaction and gratification. So yeah, my life did take a detour, what seemed to be a detour that turned into a kind of turnpike to to happiness or something. I don't know what you'd call it.
You do make it sound like an opportunity almost. And I'm especially curious about the role that teaching played during the years when there was real struggle and finding the path and finding the right way forward. What was it that teaching would do for you?
Well, I come by my love, my passion for teaching quite legitimately. I worked for 10 years with one of the great musicians of the 20th century, Arthur Schnabel, and he relished teaching. He loved teaching, and I think I that's certainly rubbed off on me. I remember those periods in my life when I was filled with questions and doubts and frustrations about what I was doing. And now that I've been able to find some of the answers that I've been looking for, I find it invigorating and enlivening to share that with younger people who are still in their very much in their questioning modes, as it were.
Do those questioning modes seem common across decades, or do people ask different questions now when they're younger from the ones they asked maybe in earlier decades?
It's pretty much the same. The physical, the technical prowess seems to improve, seems to increase. It's kind of like the 4-minute mile. When I was young, that was an unattainable goal. And then somewhere, I forget whether it was in the 50s or 60s, this young Brit called Roger Bannister achieved a 4-minute mile. And today you hear these kids that are supremely at ease on the instrument. There's virtually nothing that they cannot do. But the great questions as to the meaningfulness of what it is they're doing, and their awareness of the various, how would you call it, levels or dimensions of meaningfulness. You know, we're all challenged, no matter what the instrument is, by the fact that all the notes are equally black. So it's really up to us to determine the meaningfulness of each of these notes and how they relate one to another and how they fit into some overall scheme of transcendence and sublimity.
And I think that this is something not just with pianists, that many instrumentalists are so proficient on their instruments now in a technical sense.
Yeah.
And is there perhaps more of a danger of missing that transcendence that you see?
Unfortunately, yes. No, I think you're absolutely right. That kind of insight, that kind of awareness, I think is still as rare as it ever was. But the general level, it's not too nice a way to put it, but it's rather true. The level of mediocrity is constantly rising. And as I say, the great insights are as rare as ever.
That's practically a headline. The level of mediocrity is constantly rising. But I understand what you're talking about. Speaking of insight, of a very different kind here, Ravel wrote his two piano concertos around roughly the same time. And what do you think accounted for the very, very different directions he took between the G major and the left-hand concerto?
I'm not quite sure. I can only surmise that being faced with the limitation of writing for five fingers as opposed to 10 fingers inspired him to a level that is probably unequaled in that literature. It is an extraordinary masterpiece. His stated goal was to, let me paraphrase his words. He wanted it to be that if the listener closed his eyes and listened to this work, he would remark nothing amiss, which is a very sweet way of saying he wanted it to sound like two hands. And he achieved this, I think, in the most remarkable way. With the exception of the slow movement of the two-hand concerto, the G major, it's a little bit pap. You know, it's not, I don't think it's his greatest work, the G major, except for the slow movement. The slow movement is an absolute inspiration. But the left-hand concerto is just amazing.
I've read, and not being a pianist, I want to ask you about this. I've read that he was very crafty and clever in, even though it's virtuosic, it fits the left hand. It conforms to the shape even of the left hand. Am I right? And what does that mean?
Well, if you just look at your hand, you'll be able to see that the four digits that extend the hand, they take care of the harmonies, right, and all that underneath filler that's needed as a background. And then the thumb that comes out the side of the hand can tap out the tunes. There are about 30, 40 concertos for left hand alone. There is nothing for right hand. There's some studies for right hand alone. But nothing, literally nothing that has any value for right hand alone, because biomechanically, if you will, the configuration of the left hand allows for there being meaningful music, but the right hand, no.
that's so illuminating. It all makes sense.
It's amazing. And it's amazing how far back composers have been challenged by writing for left hand. It goes, the earliest example I know is Haydn. There's one of his piano trios that in the slow movement, the first 8, 10, 12 bars, I don't remember exactly, is for left hand alone, which is quite extraordinary. Then Reinecke, who was a contemporary of Beethoven, it goes back very far, this intrigue with writing for left hand alone.
And we tend to think of, that it started with Paul Wittgenstein, but not at all.
Thank the Lord that there was a Paul Wittgenstein, because he was possessed of a certain wealth, and he unfortunately lost his right arm in World War I. He commissioned so many of these works, most of which he was thoroughly unhappy with. He had big fights with Ravel, with Prokofiev, with Hindemith, most of the people. There was only one composer whose music he felt spoke to him expressed was configurated in terms of relationship between piano and orchestra was to his liking, and that was the Austrian composer Schmidt, Franz Schmidt. Otherwise, all these other great people, Strauss, as I say, Prokofiev, Britten, Ravel, he was quite unhappy with.
Did the Ravel have a particular meaning in a way other works didn't for you as you began to reform your way forward?
Well, only in the sense that it represented an admission to myself that I couldn't function with my right hand, and that I better start looking at this stuff. And thank the Lord the Ravel exists, although there are several other wonderful pieces. As I say, the Prokofiev Fourth, Benjamin Britten Diversions is a great piece of music. And I've been blessed with having composers of our day write things for me also. So I've been able to kind of continue that tradition. I feel very proud.
And well, you should. If I might ask, the status of the use of your right hand in performance?
Yes, I've after 35 years, they put a name to what I had. And though they don't know its provenance and they don't have a cure for it, they found a rather unique way of dealing with some of the symptoms of focal dystonia. Focal dystonia is an involuntary and uncontrollable contraction of certain muscles. They don't know what causes it. But they've discovered that minute applications of, believe it or not, Botox, that cosmetic drug, do help a little bit with those symptoms, and has enabled me to use my right hand in a certain limited fashion. It allows me to play Brahms Quintet, allows me to play certain concertos, but others I still can't play.
Well, Leon Fleischer, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with me today.
My pleasure, Brian.